It's All Dutch Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Just pretty much take your radio dial and rip it off your radio and just leave it locked here on TSN 1290. We have you covered for at least the next 10 and a half hours of Jets talk. Of course, puck drop in Phoenix coming up at 6 o'clock tonight. Winnipeg Jets 2.0 versus Jets 1.0 in front of a quasi-home crowd at the Glendale Jobbing.com Arena. Before we get to that, I'd like to introduce my two friends, frenemies, enemies, Richard, Ezzy. Good afternoon.
Good morning, Drew. I'm amped up. There's a huge game in Glendale later tonight, and I'm very excited to talk about that and obviously our guests and everything. So
it's interesting how Drew said good afternoon and you said good morning.
Thank you for picking up on that. I thought I was the only one who noticed that. Exactly. You know, it's 12 o'clock. It's definitely afternoon.
It's the morning in Vancouver. But
you're in Winnipeg.
It's the morning in Phoenix.
It is the morning in Phoenix. Exactly.
I guess that would be more apropos.
You know what, Drew? I don't want to go out and say this game is important tonight. No. Oh. You know,
overly important,
but this game is overly important tonight.
So this isn't would this be a quote-unquote win three games into the season?
No, must wins, but you don't want to go down the road of losing this game and then playing maybe the best team in the league on Monday in Pittsburgh and then going on the road. That's a slippery slope.
That's right, and of course we'll recap the Jets week that was and look forward to today's game throughout the course of the show. Our guests today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show coming up in about 30 minutes time. He's the color commentator for the Phoenix Coyotes. He is Tyson Nash. He's going to join us at about 12:30.
Always an effervescent personality, Tyson Nash. Played with the St. Louis Blues for a period of time.
Effervescent. What a starting off the day with nice words.
I thought he was more loquacious than he was effervescent myself.
Used to be Drew,
don't you suffer from logorrhea?
I don't know what that is.
I think it's when you talk too much.
Oh. Okay. Well, apparently I might suffer from that. Anyways, Tyson Nash.
Suffer from that. Right. We just do it.
That's true. Oh, I see. That's very clever. Coming up at 12:30, Tyson Nash. 1 o'clock from the Globe and Mail. Paul Waldie is going to join us. He's taken over as the beat writer here in Winnipeg for the Globe and Mail. Roy McGregor started off the year, did a great job covering the team for the first 6 weeks through training camp in the first week, and then Paul Waldie's taken over, and he's going to be here in Winnipeg, I think, for the foreseeable future, the next couple months at least, from what I understand.
That's like following up Gretz there.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, Roy is probably one of the best Canadian sports writers of all time.
Well,
Paul does a good job.
Yeah, exactly. So Paul's going to join us. Paul Waldie of the Globe and Mail is going to join us at 1 o'clock. And at 2 o'clock from Forbes.com and the hockey writers, Mike Colligan is going to join us to talk some Pittsburgh Penguins. They're Monday's opponents, so who better than Mike Colligan to talk about the Penguins?
Yeah, they're exactly right, Drew. This guy does a great job covering the team in and out, whether it be the strategy the team uses on the ice, off the ice. Pittsburgh's a very interesting team to follow in that they didn't have Malkin and Crosby, for a game last week. Malkin was back the last game. This team is a well-oiled machine. We want to ask him about that because even without Crosby and Malkin, they're very, very difficult to beat.
And Richie, not only did they not have Malkin and Crosby in the lineup earlier this week, they didn't have them in their lineup half of last year, and they did pretty well. So a lot of that has to do with the coaching. A lot of that has to do with the culture that Pittsburgh has developed over the last 3 or 4 years plus. So Colligan does a great job.
They just play so calm, cool, and collected. That's really, they don't miss a beat. That's really what it breaks down to. And we'll talk to Colligan about that coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon. So that's, action-packed show in store for you. Best way to get a hold of us, probably on Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Send us your thoughts. Send us your comments. If we decide that they're worthy, well, maybe we'll read them on air. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. The website, of course, is www.illegalcurve.com. And you can always, in case you miss any of this program, download it on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Download it and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Before we look forward to tonight in the NHL, best to look back at last night's action. Quiet Friday, as it usually tends to be in the NHL. They save their games for Saturday, of course. In Buffalo, the Carolina Hurricanes went on the road, beat a good Buffalo Sabres team 4-3. Richie, when we were having breakfast this morning, you commented about how impressive Jeff Skinner is to you.
Yeah, I mean, he is not missed a beat at all. He put on some weight on the off season. He's a terrific skater.
Good weight.
Yeah, good weight.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, no, yeah. You put on bad weight, though.
Yeah. You put on bad weight, he put on good weight.
Yeah, that's true.
He put on muscle, you put on fat.
Yeah.
And people were maybe expecting the quote-unquote sophomore slump, whether that actually exists or not, it's a whole other story. And he's just been incredible to start the season. Last night, Carolina was up 3-2. They allowed a goal with about 3 minutes left, and then Jeff Skinner came back on a power play with about a minute and a half left, popped the winner, made it 4-3. Carolina now, that's two in a row. They start off the season, I think, 0-2-1. They get two in a row. They go into Buffalo. Buffalo's home opener, right? Because Buffalo opened the season in Europe. They come in there and get a big win. And, you know, that forward core has a lot of guys who can contribute, but their two big guys are Skinner and Staal. And Skinner's been the best forward so far.
I agree with you about Skinner. And when you talk about the Carolina Hurricanes, that's a team that is in Winnipeg's division, and they're going to have to pass a team like Carolina. They're going to have to play them six times this year.
That's right.
And
that's right.
It's a very good team. And you look at a guy like Brandon Sutter got a goal yesterday. Their defense, there's been a few moves getting Caberle in there, but that team is looking pretty good early on. We're not going to get too excited here, but that's a very good hockey team. You know, there aren't very many holes up and down the lineup. And, you know, a guy like Jeff Skinner, no sophomore slump. Eric Staal, one of the greatest in the game, like you said, and it's an exciting team to watch. Very fast paced, well coached by Paul Maurice.
We'll see a lot more of. We'll talk a lot more about Carolina next Saturday, as they're the Jets' opponent here in the first Saturday Hockey Night in Canada game in Winnipeg. That's next Saturday. Jets big sports day next Saturday here in Winnipeg. Bomber game against the Alouettes early afternoon. Then follow that up with the Jets Hurricanes starting an hour after the Bombers should finish. So that'll be an exciting Saturday. Yeah, we got the doubleheader. It'll be a real good day here, of course.
It's one of those days
in Winnipeg and on TSN 1290, without a doubt.
It's one of those days where there's 45,000 people watching sports in Winnipeg. That's pretty amazing.
That's right. The other game last night saw the Anaheim Ducks defeat the San Jose Sharks 1-0. Just goes to show you how good a goaltender Jonas Hiller is when he's healthy.
That's it, Drew. Last year they didn't have him, and they still made the first round of playoffs and lost in a close six-game series to Nashville. Adding Jonas Hiller, one of the best, having him back, one of the best netminders in the National Hockey League, goes a long way for them. And that Anaheim's been a team that hasn't been the best defensively over the past few years. They got outshot yesterday, but they were leading. Anaheim has won a game, and they haven't had a point from their top line. So think about it that way. This team hasn't had a point from their top line, and they're doing all right in standings. They got a shootout win over the Rangers, so I think they're 2-1. And they don't have any points from Getzlaff, Perry, and Ryan, aside from Ryan's shootout goal. So they're looking all right now.
That's exactly right. Big night in the NHL tonight. 14 games on this schedule is, typical for a Saturday night. Last year when we were doing this, we go through the games, we talk about the highlight, the best game. Frankly, this year it doesn't matter. We all know what the best game is, and that's always the Winnipeg game. And they're in Phoenix, and we'll get into more exquisite detail about that as we go throughout the program today. But some other games that jump out, Vancouver at Edmonton, that would be the late game on Hockey Night in Canada. That's, Vancouver's off to a bit of a slow start, 1-2-1.
Yep.
They really need to pick it up. Edmonton at home, should be a good challenge for the young Oilers team. You look down the roster, Boston at Chicago. Those are two.
Past two Stanley Cup champions.
Exactly. Those two matching up is always going to be a good battle. Los Angeles at Philly. We'll cover that a little bit more in detail. Mike Richards returns to Philadelphia, the team that he was traded from earlier in the season.
Two great teams. Interesting to see. What'll transpire there?
That's right. Buffalo at Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh,
that's a good game.
Pittsburgh's 3-0-2 to start season. I mean, a lot of good hockey, early on in the season this year. And, look at this Colorado team off to a great start. They demolished Ottawa on home earlier in the week. 7-1 defeat. Colorado did handed to the Ottawa Senators. That was embarrassing.
Shane looks good. Landeskog looking good.
Lots of young talent, but once again, the Colorado team is a team that last year got off to a very good start, and we know where they ended up finishing, so let's not get too excited here. That's a team that's at least a few years away from making anything in the Western Conference. But to me, probably the team that's impressed me the most, and it's very apropos because we've got Mike Colligan on, and that's Pittsburgh. I mean, no Crosby.
Yeah.
Malkin has missed one or two games, and they go through Western Canada and get 5 out of 6 points. To me, I picked them to win the Stanley Cup, which is obviously completely unbiased, as you did too, Richie. And to me, there's so much to like. James Neal's leading the league in goals, yeah. And he really still hasn't really put together his A game yet, and he's probably waiting for Crosby to come back.
And he adds in a certain element that they have, as it's a kind of up and down wing, good skater for a big guy. It's a nice change for them.
Exactly right. 10 minutes past 12 o'clock here on TSN 1290. This is Old Dutch Foods game. The Coyotes game gets underway at 6 o'clock today in Jobbing.com Arena in Glendale, Arizona. We're going to cover that game. I mean, you know, do you buy into this 1.0 versus 2.0, you know, the old Jets against new Jets?
Yeah, a little bit, Drew.
Yeah?
I mean, for all the fans going down there, I mean, how can you not get into it? But you're going to be watching the game and you're going to be hearing the Winnipeg Jets fans, maybe not exactly as loud as Phoenix's fans, but you're going to be able to hear them on TV. And if you can hear them on TV, that gets you more into the game. There is a certain revenge factor. It'll be more so when Phoenix comes here.
Right.
But why are they playing them twice, by the way?
I was wondering that myself, because it's weird that they play... it's unusual. I mean, I guess it's...
It's they're at-large. There's three at-large games. People don't know. There's three at-large games in the National Hockey League.
Where you play the... Where you play
random.
Your...
You can play random
teams. Random teams.
So
but there are random teams in the other conference. Is that right? Or are they random teams in your own conference?
I think it's random teams in the other conference.
Yeah. Okay, so...
And so they picked Phoenix, probably. It's like similar to how Toronto will pick Vancouver, you know, so Canadian matchups and stuff like that.
And as far as the hype for this game goes, it's well known by now that, you know, the Phoenix Coyotes were, you know, a few minutes away from possibly coming back to Winnipeg. As far as I'm concerned, people from Winnipeg would be making this trek regardless if we got the Coyotes or the Thrashers. I think today it's all about Winnipeg Jets fans experiencing us being back in the NHL and enjoying that in Phoenix. I don't think anyone's there to rub it in. I think people are there to wear their new Jets jerseys and have fun.
I think there could be some animosity in that crowd, and we'll talk to Paul Waldy and Tyson Nash about that. You know, I hope that nothing will happen, but it wouldn't surprise me if there were some stories of some people getting out of hand in their enthusiasm for either team.
Right, Drew, and when
the beer and food's cheap there because nobody actually goes.
Right, and Richie, the people that paid $6 to go to this game might as well get their money's worth, right? So if they decide to boo or whatever, the fact is we have an NHL team back, so I don't know what as far as I'm concerned, people that are going there to rub it in, that's not my style. We have our own team back. I think it's there to be proud and all that.
Well, it'll be
all that aside, though, Drew. Yeah. This is if this team wants to make the playoffs, they have to win games like this.
Absolutely, they really have to win the game. I mean, you know, you can. They have to win the Montreal game. That's why the Montreal loss last Sunday was so. Can't understate overstate its importance.
Well, I don't know about that, but I think you're saying get off on a good.
Not even that. Montreal's a team you're going to have to be better than to make the playoffs. We don't believe. I mean, you and I, Richie, don't believe that they're realistically going to make the playoffs.
No. And I'm bound by my prediction.
And you're bound,
months ago.
Exactly. We're holding you to that, so you can't change your mind there, Ezzy. But we don't think that they're good enough to make the playoffs. But if they're going to, surprise us, you have to beat a team like Montreal on home ice when you have all the momentum behind you like they did last Sunday, and they came out flat, and I think their moment got the moment was too big for the players on last Sunday.
Well, I wonder, Drew, if the pressure will be there because there's so many fans at the game tonight.
It's a fair point.
It's a Hockey
well.
Canada night, game, and it's for all we want to say about you grow up Hockey Night Canada, it's still Saturday night game. You're on the CBC light, the lights are there, the spotlights are on you, and it's not a national game because there's seven Canadian teams playing tonight. But even so, there's still a certain, it's similar to when a player plays on national TV at any other level. It raises your excitement level, and sometimes that can have an adverse effect on your production.
This is just my personal opinion, but as far as I'm concerned, this is a home game for the Jets. When they look up into the stands, and you'll be able to see the stands, Drew. Because there's going to be that many empty seats if people didn't pick up on that. I think this is a home game. You're going to look up and you're going to see hundreds, if not thousands, of Jets fans cheering you on. 4 or 5 hours away, whatever the day is from Winnipeg. So as far as I'm concerned,
five
that's
hours.
Be,
five that's hours. Where are they traveling?
They go to Mexico.
Whatever. 4 hours. I don't know. I don't work for Air Canada. So they're going to be definitely.
Are you on strike yet?
He doesn't stay downtown anymore though in Winnipeg either.
Like, they cut my hours back.
Let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, we'll talk more about the Jets-Coyotes game. You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day here on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Be sure to join Illegal Curve Hockey for their weekly appearances at the Cheer Bar and Grill.
By the way, Drew, it was nice of you to give one of your HD TVs to the Cheer. They really appreciated that.
Well, you know, I have a garage full of them and all, yeah. So I figured that they'd just give them away like that. I thought that was generous of me.
At least you've calmed down, Drew.
Well, you know, Ezzy's is getting me riled up in the commercial break, and it's not really fair that I can't come back. I can't come back at
him. Drew,
he's allowed to rile me up, but I'm not allowed to come back at him. That doesn't seem fair to me.
For everyone who's not in the studio, and that's probably most people.
That's probably everyone.
Everybody or everybody.
Drew brought a mink fur coat to the studio today, and I was ribbing him about it, and he got mad.
Ezzy, in fact,
Richie was wearing it
instead
earlier
of calling
today.
PETA, you just ate a PETA.
Yeah, that's true. Ezzy actually did eat it. It's very odd. We don't even know where he got the PETA from, because he didn't have it earlier, so that's really just not...
Well, I always roll with tzatziki sauce, so...
Yeah, exactly. That's smart of you. You never know when tzatziki will come into hand. Let's talk about the Coyotes-Jets game in this...
Drew, what are you talking about?
I don't know. Let's talk about the Coyotes-Jets game in some more detail. You know, to you, Richie, I'll start with you, and then I'll go to you there, Ezzy.
Because you're avoiding me.
Of course. You know, what's the key? You know, you've seen the Jets play two games now. You know, they were outclassed against Montreal. They played better, I thought, against Chicago, which is a better team than Montreal. Phoenix is, on paper, not a great team this year, well-coached by Dave Tippett.
Sure.
But, you know, what is going to be the key for the Jets in today's contest?
You know, Drew, that is a good question, because this Phoenix team has pieces, veteran pieces, and Dave Tippett likes to ride the veterans, and we'll ask Tyson Nash about that. They need to be able to work on these netminders. And when you deal with Mike Smith and Jason LaBarbera, I'm not sure who's in net yet tonight. I don't know if they've announced that. But that's their weakness. These are guys who have never really been NHL, you know, aside from a short stint in Mike Smith in Tampa, obviously Dallas before that. They haven't really been starting NHL netminders. You need to get on them right away. You need to get a lot of shots. I think shots are very important. Sure, obviously you want to outshoot the other team, but especially against a team like this. This isn't Carey Price. Right, Ray Emery, they got three goals against a guy like Ray Emery, but a better team in Chicago. You have to be able to score on these goaltenders. Some of these Phoenix defenders also, you know, leave something to be desired. Some, you know, Derek Morris and Adrian Aucoin. Adrian Aucoin's not that quick. There's certain guys you can work on, but overall, that you know, 1-6, their defense isn't bad. You have to score on these goaltenders, and then you have to. And this team's going to be a little bit hard pressed up front to score goals. So if you can get an early lead, obviously, again, you always want to get an early lead, but especially in this game. You want to get on the goalies early, and then you want to be able to shut it down on. And I want to see if they can shut it down because, you know, everybody said, oh, they were all excited. If you have a 2-0 lead in the NHL, and especially against Chicago, it's already gone by the end of the first period. You're not doing something right.
Well, you know, the problem with that 2-0 lead they got, I mean, they came out strong to start against Chicago, and Chicago, I don't know if they overlooked them for the first 10 minutes or what it was, but they definitely, you know, let the Jets take the play to them. You know, but then Chicago just took over with their skill, and that's something the Jets just can't compete with.
Drew, yeah, you know, sorry, Richie, I just wanted to quickly say on the topic of that, you know, Jets-Hawks game on Thursday night, I mean, yeah, they came out firing, and Jim Slater got two goals, and everything was going well. Chicago is a better team, but in the fundamental areas of the game, Winnipeg was outplayed. Puck possession, passing,
chances,
their penalty kill. I mean, Chicago dominated them. As far as I'm concerned, Winnipeg was better against Montreal than they were against Chicago, and that's including the start. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Winnipeg is going to have to, and Claude Noël has said this, they can't play sloppy hockey and bring a B game to a team like Winnipeg. Against a team like Chicago. It's not going to work against Phoenix. Phoenix is a much more beatable team. Yeah, they beat Nashville 5-2, and it was a great road victory on Thursday night, but I still think there are too many holes on Phoenix, and they're not a playoff team this year. Winnipeg can't afford to have the puck in their zone for the majority of the game against a team like Chicago. Andre Pavlik saved that game from being embarrassing. It wasn't a 4-3 game, in my opinion. I think they could have easily won by 3 or 4 goals.
Phoenix, Drew, is a group that's going to be working you over. You have to also, one thing, you want to make sure you keep them off the power play. I mean, the Jets they played a pretty disciplined game.
Yeah, they didn't. I mean, the first power play goal by Andrew Brunette was, Toby Enstrom took a tripping penalty that, you know, it was a reasonable penalty to take.
Yeah, the Carson penalty, the penalty Bellis, John, that wasn't really a penalty. And they played a pretty disciplined hockey for the most part. You want to stay disciplined against a team like this, because a guy like Ray Whitney isn't that effective when he's playing on 5-on-5, but he's especially effective on the power play. They have veteran scorers, Drew, that
you know, aren't what they once were. Their whole top line of Whitney, Doan, and Lankow isn't what it once was.
No, that's an old top line right now.
I mean, they're third and fourth lines of guys who are fourth liners, really. And then you have Hanzel, second line center, and playing with Bodker and Verbata. So the question really is this. It's if you're playing up against Chicago, you know, okay, you know, Brian Little can't compete with Jonathan Toews. We know that.
Right.
The first line's not going to match up. Even the second line. Their second line was Patrick Kane, Marian Hossa, and Dan Carcillo. You're not going to line up.
No.
Tonight?
Yeah.
Your lines can outplay the other lines. So they just have to do that now. It may sound simple, but in reality, in playing Chicago, you have to find a way to get some points that usually aren't there, whether it be offense from the back end or something like that.
So you're Jets coach, Claude Noel, yep. and you're strategizing to play against Phoenix. What are you saying that this is, what is our advantage that we can take that we have over the Phoenix Coyotes? Where can we say, this is what we need to concentrate on, attack this part of Phoenix, and we will have success?
Well, I think Richie would agree with this. I think as far as speed goes, you're completely... You're completely changing your strategy against a team like Chicago, whereas Phoenix is a little bit slower.
They're slower.
Phoenix
yeah.
is a more of a defensive team, well coached, and Winnipeg is going to have to get the puck out of their own zone and not run around. I mean, I don't feel that I'm being too hard on the Jets. I mean, in that game, Claude Noel would probably tell you this. They were in their zone too much running around.
They have terrible defensive positioning, absolutely.
Their positioning was off. Go ahead, Richie.
Well, on that point, if I'm Claude Noel, I go and I say, okay, there's one thing that you guys can work on. It's speed. Not as he's put, it's speed. It's this team's not as fast. I can mention a number of slower players. Ray Whitney, Damon Lankow. Shane Doan slow down a bit. Taylor Pyatt's not the best skater. Rafi Torres. And then Adrian Acorn's really slow. You know, Derek Morris doesn't skate as he once did. All those guys. And then some, you know, inexperience. And Larson and Schlemko and Yandel, offensive players who have some defensive deficiencies. You use speed wide. You get the puck down low. You get a little bit of a cycle game goal. But you use speed. What I'm saying is you use speed to enter the zone. And then you one of the things I've noticed, especially from the top line, everything's off the rush, and it's always on the perimeter. Get the puck in deep. Work a bit of a cycle game.
Well, that's what I want to interrupt there right there. 125 on Old Dutch Foods game day here on TSN 1290. 1225. I'm looking at the computer. I'm looking at the computer clock, not the...
what are you, Marty McFly?
Clock. Yeah. But... The cycle game that you mentioned,
yeah,
it seems like it's been relatively non-existent for the Jets in the first two games.
Because it has been non-existent.
Is that just a function of talent? Like, why can't they cycle?
Well, the truth is this. You know, people sometimes forget that they think cycling is a product of a bigger player playing the corner using a size. The Sedin cycle as well as anybody.
Yep.
Maybe better than anybody ever has.
Cycle is just moving and
it's skill and it's knowing. Now, the Ladd Wheeler... Little line has played together for, I don't know, 30 games now, guys.
Yep.
There's got to be some kind of a chemistry in place there. Wheeler, with his size and speed and hands, and Ladd's tough. Little isn't the biggest guy, but there's an ability there. The problem is this, guys, is if you're going to always try and get points off the rush, if teams play you really well in the neutral zone especially and don't take too many risks defensively, unlike the Jets who do take too many risks defensively, what happens is they shut you down because you can't sustain pressure. Offensive possession, the line, now they're not playing against obviously the best players on the other team, but the best line for sustained pressure on this team through two games, everybody knows in this room.
The fourth line.
Fourth line?
Yeah, well, the fourth line, I mean, has been the only... If you look at the fourth line, it's the only line where you might say on a regular basis the Jets have an advantage over the opponent's fourth line.
And Drew, back to your question about strategy, against teams like Chicago, against Pittsburgh, you're on the defensive. You're thinking, okay, Patrick Kane, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Jonathan Toews, we have to stop these guys. Phoenix doesn't have of those guys.
Right.
So now you can get a little bit more offensive. You can establish... The cycle is the cousin of the forecheck, and you hear this time and time again in hockey. Establish the forecheck. The reason why that's so important is because you're essentially setting a pace for the game. As far as I'm concerned, against Montreal and Chicago, the Jets were just in their zone too much. Everyone likes to look at shots, and the shots in that game were 32-30, I believe, in favor of Chicago. So people say, you know, that's not that bad. That's not really what it's about.
No,
it's
you can't look at shots.
I mean, shots are a weak stat. You have to look at puck possession, as far as I'm concerned, and the Jets didn't have the puck as much as the Blackhawks. I unfortunately don't have the stat. But as far as I'm concerned, they can be more aggressive against the Coyotes, who are an aggressive forechecking team as well. But there's more of a chance, I think, for the Jets to maybe roll out a more full 60-minute strategy against a team like Phoenix as opposed to Chicago, because as far as I was concerned, they didn't have anything established in that game, and they were on their heels the entire game.
And that's just, yeah, I agree with you there. It just seemed as though
most of the game, the first 10 minutes wasn't bad. But
yeah, it's a talent disparity.
Can you use your speed to create sustained pressure for, to create sustained pressure? Leave it at that. Another thing also is if they do make the line changes that they're apparently going to make, as per Tim Campbell, they have Vander Kane playing with Bermistrov and Antropov at practice.
Yeah.
The question is, how do you hide that third line guy?
That third line is the worst third line in hockey.
It might be.
McLean, Scheifele, and Wellwood? That might be the worst third line in hockey right now.
Might be.
The problem that you've got, in addition, Richie, to the fact that those guys have never played with each other before. Nope. Brett McLean was picked up 2 weeks ago. It's that you've got a rookie center,
He's been overmatched.
It was picked up 1 week ago today, McLean. 1 week Saturday, ago.
And Kyle Wellwood's the type of player that needs to play.
Friday.
If he's not playing center, he needs to play with a guy that's going to get him the puck because he's an offensive guy that likes to be around the net. So I think that putting a Vander Kane with Bermistrov and Antropov is a good move, and I think I'm looking for that line to be better tonight.
Let's go to break. We remind you that this segment was brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located at the corner of Stradbrook and Osborne. Remember to join the Illegal Curve Hockey Show at the Cheer Bar and Grill tonight for the Coyotes.
How was it on Thursday?
Game. It's fabulous time. Come down to the Cheer tonight. Join us there time. When we come back on the other side, Phoenix Coyotes color commentator Tyson Nash. You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290. Little known fact, there was a remake, Eye of the Ezra.
That never happened.
All right, that's true. That's 0 for 1 on the jokes today.
0 for 1? That's going to be my only attempt, so really, it's at that point in time, that's everything. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. It is Old Dutch Foods Game Day.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
And let's welcome to the program. He's the color commentator for the Phoenix Coyotes. He's Tyson Nash. Tyson, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. How are things in Phoenix this morning there, I guess?
Things are good. It's hot. The weather's good. And, I understand there's going to be a lot of Winnipeg fans here tonight. So I think it's going to make it for a hostile environment. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm between the benches today, so I'm going to be able to take it all in tonight.
There you go. You'll be able to get it firsthand what's going to happen there at Jobbing.com Arena. Tyson, let's start with sort of the big change that the Phoenix Coyotes made from last year to this year, and that's the departure of Ilya Bryzgalov. Has the team changed its style of a play in accordance with Bryzgalov no longer being there?
Well, obviously a huge hole to fill when you lose a goaltender of Ilya's quality. We all know what he meant here. But no, the system in front of him has not changed. In fact, I think that's kind of what helps Briz in the way he played was the system. I think it's a very goalie-friendly system. We allow a lot of shots, but a lot of shots from the outside, which I think goaltenders don't mind. And I think that has remained the same here in Phoenix. Both goaltenders have played really well. They lost that first game in San Jose 6-3, but that wasn't really the story. Mike Smith was not the problem. It was the play in front of him. But anyway, it's going to be a battle. There's still a lot of question marks as far as goaltending goes, but it's going to be a lot more of a tandem effort, I think, between LaBarbera and Mike Smith, but both of them very qualified.
Tyson, Andrew Vanosky got signed by the Panthers in free agency, and that's obviously a pretty significant loss on the back end for the Coyotes. Who do you see as eating up those minutes?
Well, again, I think... we don't really have that one guy besides Keith Yandle that's going to eat up a lot of minutes. Keith is probably going to be our top minute guy on the back end. But we have a lot of guys that, are just real steady. We're hoping that Ekman Larson, one of the young studs in the National Hockey League, can really take a step forward this year. And, he's not a rookie anymore, so I think it has to be his time. He's played real well so far in the first two out of the three games. Schlemko is another guy in the back end that's young, very talented, a good puck mover. That it's time for him to step up as well. So if those young kids can eat up some more minutes, along with the veteran presence of guys like Roosevelt and Kwesla and Derek Morris, I think we'll be all right.
Tyson, Damon Lankow is back playing for the Phoenix Coyotes, a team that he played for before he played for the Calgary Flames. What does Lankow bring to the Phoenix Coyotes that Lee Stempniak didn't?
Well, I think he brings stability up the middle. He's a centerman. He's great in the faceoff circle. You know, you don't really notice a guy like Damon all that much, but it's funny. At the end of the night, you look at the stat sheet, and you're like, oh, man, he had another assist, or he had 2 points, you know, and he's just so steady. And I think what he brings is chemistry with Shane Doan, and that's been the most important thing. I think ever since he left, Shane Doan's been pouting, hoping they get him back because of the chemistry they possessed when they played together before. That's picked up right where it left off with the start, as you can see with Shane Doan, the way he's played, probably his best start in his career. So that's been huge. Ray Whitney also has played real well with Damon Lanko. He's just easy to read off. He does all the little things. You know, he makes the simple plays. He's a very predictable player. When you play with a guy like that, he's very to read off, easy to read off.
12:36 here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290. We're joined by Phoenix Coyotes color commentator Tyson Nash. Tyson, you mentioned Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and you know the team needs him to sort of step up and fill some of those Ed Jovanovski minutes. You know, from the organization's perspective, what would a successful year for Larsson look like?
Well, I think, you know, just being more assertive. I think just taking charge. When you can skate the way he can skate, shoot the way he can shoot, and see the ice the way he sees the ice, I mean, you should be a dominant player in this league. But defense is probably the hardest position for a young player. You need to mature. But I think with all those tools, he needs to, you know, to produce a little bit. And I think that Dave Tippett and Jimmy Playfair, I think, is going to be huge in his development. Jimmy Playfair is a real good development-type coach for the back end. And I think Ekman, you know, I mean, he's got a great shot. I'd like to see him shoot the puck more, jump up into the play a little bit more, and I think the numbers will come.
Tyson, Kyle Turris isn't obviously playing for the team right now and is without a contract, and that's been probably one of the more bizarre contract holdouts for over the past couple of years. Do you see this resolving itself in the next, you know, week, 2 weeks, month, or do you see this being a long-standing problem?
Well, it'll be a long-standing problem if he doesn't wake up and smell the coffee. I can tell you that firsthand. And if he's not willing to drop his price to the rest of his comparables, which I don't think is much to ask, you know, the Coyotes aren't sitting there saying, hey, you know, we don't want to pay you what you're worth.
Right.
They're just saying, we want to pay you what you're worth. And, you know, that's been the most bizarre thing. I think we can all agree. Right now, I don't think it's going to get resolved unless he wakes up.
What's the scuttlebutt amongst the other players in regards to his contract status? Do they, you know, are they sympathizing with him, or are they as sort of confused by the whole situation as the, you know, outside public seems to be?
Well, I think that, you know, they're a little confused. I'm sure they played with him, you know, for the last few years. I think the biggest thing with Kyle that's unfortunate when I talk to Shane is I think he feels bad for him. You know, I just don't think he realizes what he's doing to his reputation and to his future of his career. He's a young kid. He needs to play. And, you know, any player, you know, that's going to get paid that wants those numbers, I mean, you have to earn it. And I'm not saying Kyle Turris, you know, won't get there one day. But to say that you deserve it right now is absolutely ridiculous, because that couldn't be anything farther from the truth. He needs to become an everyday NHL player. And, you know, the Coyotes are willing to pay him what he's worth, and that's it. And I don't think, you know, nowadays with the cap situation, too, I mean, you can't, you know, give away that type of money that's unproven right now.
Do you think he's getting bad advice from his agent?
I'm not sure where the advice is coming from, you know, to be honest. You know, I don't know if it's himself alone, or, I mean, that's just me speculating, you know, his family, it's hard to say. I mean, but to me, it just seems like a guy that maybe just wants out of Phoenix and probably doesn't want all that money, or maybe just is a little bit scared that he doesn't want to come out and ask for a trade. I don't know.
This is Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290. We're joined by Phoenix Coyotes color commentator Tyson Nash on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You know, Tyson, on this point, is it accurate to say that Coach Dave Tippett prefers veteran players to younger players, or in your opinion, is that a little bit overblown?
Oh, it's so overblown, it's not even funny. I mean, I laugh when people say that because it's a joke, you know. And when you look at Dave Tippett, first of all, he won the Jack Adams, 2 years ago. He probably should have been a finalist again last year. So to question anything that Dave Tippett, in my mind, is ridiculous. And then on top of that, you know, Dave Tippett always talks about, you know, players earn their ice time. The coaches don't dictate it. And I think at the end of the day, the NHL in particular, it's a league that you need to win in. It's a development league. You can't have young kids going out there and same mistakes over and over. But if you're going to earn your ice time and you're going to go out there and play hard, you're going to get your ice time. I can guarantee you. Dave Tippett's a reward type of coach, and I think that's how he gets guys that overachieve that maybe aren't typically playing a ton of minutes, you know, year after year. But they will play if you go out there and show that you got it going. You're going to get a lot of ice time in that particular game.
Tyson, you know, with the game in Phoenix tonight, the home opener, and there's no NBA and no NBA, you know, seemingly anywhere on the horizon, is there an opportunity for the Coyotes to sort of make an impact in the market and, you know, get some good, you know, vibes going? And, you know, what is the vibe in Phoenix for the game tonight?
Well, I think it's going to be huge. I mean, you know, home opener, it's obviously going to be sold out. I'm sure our next game, too, as well, is going to be close to sold out against the Chicago Blackhawks. But it's the games after that. I think the only thing that's, you know, going to fix all that is going to be ownership. And once ownership comes in, then I think people are waiting on the fence saying, hey, you know, we don't want to make a financial investment into a team that may not be here next year. I mean, you need to see ownership in place, and then you'll spend some money. You know, yeah, you're going to get guys going to hockey games, but it's not going to be like it was if you had strong ownership that was, you know, willing to, you know, put some money on the table and move forward. So, but the vibe is good. I mean, you know, the players recognize that, hey, we need to win hockey games. Without the NBA, they saw the last few years even that with all the games that they won, the fans increased. You know, everybody in Phoenix has a lot of stuff to do here. You know, a lot of other things to do here, and people want to see a winner. And I think that's the same anywhere. I grew up in Edmonton, and, you know, for 8 years, the Phoenix Coyotes team lost a lot. So I think even in a Canadian market, like in Edmonton that I grew up in, you're not going to see that building packed out. I don't care what you say. So you need to win. That's the bottom line, and that will bring the fans.
Do you sense any animosity amongst Coyotes fans for the influx of Winnipeg fans that are coming to tonight's game?
I think they want to win this game. I think the media is going to make a bigger story out of it than anything. It's not like it's the Winnipeg Jets of old. I'm not going to see Keith Tkachuk and Kimmo Salani skating out on the ice. It's going to be.
If you do, let
Atlanta.
Us know.
basically the Atlanta Thrashers. So I don't think there's anything players-wise. Like, you're right. It's probably just more to do with the fans than anything, saying, hey, you know, we want to win this one and show you guys that we're the better team, I guess, whatever.
Tyson Nash, color commentator for the Phoenix Coyotes, thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hopefully we'll see you in Winnipeg in December.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks.
Take care, Tyson. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It is Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290. 12:45 in the afternoon. A big thank you to Tyson Nash, color commentator for the Phoenix Coyotes. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Welcome back to Old Dutch Foods Game Day here on TSN 1290. Gentlemen, let's spend some time really breaking down the forward groups of the Coyotes and the Jets. What's really jumped out at me in the last two games is how the Jets' number one line of Ladd, Little, and Wheeler has been... just can't compete against the top lines of the Canadiens and of the Blackhawks. Is that going to change any tonight?
Yeah, tonight is a night that they can compete with the number one line, the other team. Absolutely. I mean, you're looking at Lankow and Doan and I'm forgetting who's left side there. Hold on. Whitney. So, yeah, I mean, they can definitely compete with that group. But, again, we talk about, you know, matching up. And you made a good point, Drew. I mean, Ladd had a couple of chances in Chicago. But the other guys weren't creating much offense, and they certainly all three of them in the Montreal game didn't create much offense. Now, of course, I always want to compare, you know, we're talking about the first two games of the season. If we were talking, yeah, and so everything is obviously, you know, is magnified now.
Sure,
of course,
a much smaller sample
size. What I always want to compare it to, it's an extremely small sample size, and, you know, if this was happening in middle of February, would we be making the same comments? Over this past two games, yes. I mean, we're not saying they're not going to be good this year, but they haven't performed in the first two games, and what these guys aren't, 80 to 90 point players, we know that. They're probably 60 point guys at tops. I mean, last year, Ladd had 30 goals and 29 goals and 30 assists. Will he be much better than that? I don't know. I mean, I see Ladd as more second line left winger, and I see, you know, hopefully Kane hopping over him eventually. But Wheeler and Little, this is a really big season for them, because I think you know what you got in Ladd. I really do. I don't really know what you got in Little. You don't really know what you got in Wheeler. And they're going to get the opportunities to prove if they can be 60-point guys or 55-point guys or even 50-point guys.
And
can you be top six forwards? That's what you want to know.
And we've already talked about this a lot dating back to the summer about the time. We've known what the top line was going to be. The top line, nobody has ever said that the top line is Getzlaff, Perry, and Ryan. No one's ever said, we know that this is a hard-working line. They've got skill. It's not as skillful as the Chicago Blackhawks or like I said, the Anaheim Ducks top line, which is arguably one of the best. But Andrew Ladd, you can make the argument, is the most consistent player. You know what you're going to get from him. He's going to lead that line. He's the leader of the team. But when I look at Drew matching up top line versus top line, I think it's almost as important as you look at who are they going to go up against, what pairing are they going to go up against. If you're going up against Keith Yandel, if you're going up against Ekman-Larsson's in the lineup today, what are they going to be able to accomplish against them? Because if you look at a player like Blake Wheeler, and they've got speed. This is a team.
That's right.
Pardon me, a line that has speed.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have. Necessarily breakneck speed, and they're not going to fly around necessarily at the level of an Evgeny Malkin. But it's a team that is going to create offense. They're going to get chances. They definitely would benefit from shooting the puck more and maybe getting a little bit more of a cycle going. And I think they will against Phoenix. But like you said, they've played enough now together, dating back to last season when Blake Wheeler came over from the Phoenix Coyotes. It's not a line that's played together, for more than half of a season, really. But I think you're going to see them more effective tonight, and you're going to see them play better as the season goes along, and especially against when you're not matching up against Shea Weber and Ryan Suter
A couple other things as you do it. They can't win a faceoff.
Well, I tweeted that right before, and there's about 30 seconds left in the Chicago game when they had the, a face-off deep in the Blackhawks zone after an icing.
Yeah.
So they had the Blackhawks really, out of gas because they couldn't change. They should be vulnerable, the Blackhawks, at that point in time. They had no chance to win the face-off. I mean, Jonathan Toews taking the face-off.
Well, I mean, you have Slater and Wellwood and the guys who can win draws on the team. Scheifele, they don't rely on him at all to take draws. But Bermistrov and Little, their two top centers, aren't very good on draws. Another thing I want to talk about, it's the defense combinations. I much prefer the defense combinations of the preseason than to how it's been the regular season. I really don't like the combination of Oduya and Buffalo together.
It's awful.
Don't like it. I don't know why it would have been the decision that they made to play those guys together. But one thing I do like, and we're going to make comments on everything, I really do like, and I tweeted about this, I like Ron Hainsey in getting increased ice time. I thought he's been a productive player.
Yep.
He helps the transition game.
Yep.
He's not the best defensively, but he gets pushed off the puck a bit. He's not the best defensively, but he creates a lot going the right way, and he can be positionally sound for the most part. He just gets, he's out-muscled and things like that. Once in a while, he loses the track of where he is, and he's not great on the boards. But overall, I think he brings a positive aspect to the game, and I think they have to start, to me, him getting more ice time helps, but I don't like the combination of Oduya and Buffalo. I don't. Oduya likes to wander a bit. And
Buffalo likes to play every position but defense.
Yeah, Buffalo plays like a midfield desk. And you can put, I understand they want to split up Enstrom and Buffalo in a sense. Okay, not sure if I like that or don't like that, but I just don't think those two guys can play together. Whatever other combination they get out of it, that's fine, but I don't think those two guys can play together.
Yeah, and Richie,
12:52 on Old Dutch Foods game day here on TSN 1290. We're talking about the forward combinations and the, I guess, defensive combinations for the Winnipeg Jets going into Tate's matchup against the Phoenix Coyotes.
And Drew, Claude Noel likes the combination of Mark Stewart and Zach Bogosian together, but I agree with Richie on this one. That pairing needs to be changed. We don't know. I wasn't at practice the last few days. I'm not sure if they're going to change that.
And you weren't in Chicago at Johnny's Ice House where they practiced yesterday?
No, more so in practice in Winnipeg, but it hasn't been good. They've spent too much time in their zone. The Jets have some good defensemen, but the way things have gone so far, getting the first puck out of your zone, the transition, the breakout game hasn't been good. It's probably something that needs to be rectified fairly early, because this is a team that can't afford to be in their own zone.
What jumped out at me, we're going all over the place, and we'll get back into the Chicago game in more detail. you know, that play late in the second period where Bogosian had the puck on a stick right at their own goal line that led to the fourth Chicago goal. Where he had the puck on a stick and he panicked and he almost shot the puck past Pavlich on his own.
Now, to qualify that, what happened was, beginning on that rush, is that he joined the rush. He got caught up deep, kind of a pass into the high part of the zone right on top of the circle. It went back the other way. He was already deep in the zone. So when he came to get that puck, Drew, he was rushing back because he got caught up by ice and left Stewart on his own, got the puck after rushing back, panicked because he clearly wasn't, you know, he just hustled so hard to get back. And so what happens is, Drew, the puck hits the net. That's not a great play. But that play starts all the way up the ice because he's out of position, and so he's panicking. And when he gets panics and he gets the puck, he's out of gas a bit, and he doesn't make a great decision. And when you're pinching, and this team's going to be pinching a lot, and they need to pinch a bit, guys, because they need to create offense from the back end. They do.
Pinching is okay. Freelancing is the problem, and Bogosian and Byfuglien freelance. I think that's where they're running into problems. When you're pinching, everybody compensates for it. When you freelance, the other four guys on the ice.
Byfuglien freelances for sure. Bogosian has been getting in position, maybe trying to do too much. I also find it interesting that Bogosian didn't play any shorthanded ice time last game, which is weird.
Why? He should be out there.
I agree. I think he should be out there.
Well, if you can't rely on them defensively. I mean, if you can't rely on
the most even streak minutes of any defenseman, aside from Hainsey, and you're telling me you can't rely on him defensively.
Well, no, I'm asking you this question. How do you take guys who are freelancers, who like to wander, like Byfuglien and Bogosian do, and how do you make them more responsible? These guys have been in the league for a number of years now, so how do you make those guys more responsible?
But is that Byfuglien's game? Is that Byfuglien's game? Are you going to try to make him into something he's not?
Well, I mean, at some point in time, if he's not that, then I think you need to compensate for that by not putting him with Oduya.
Exactly.
You need to put him with a stay-at-home defenseman.
I think even though Zach Bogosian has made mistakes, the two best defensemen on Winnipeg have been Enstrom and Bogosian, as far as I'm concerned, and it's not even close.
I don't know about Bogosian. Enstrom I'll give you, but I thought he's been better than Bogosian.
Yeah, I agree with that, Drew.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, from the first practice at the Iceplex.
Enstrom didn't have a great game on Thursday either. I do like Hainsey.
So you're saying nobody's had a good game?
I really
when
don't.
When you lose both games.
I really don't think anybody, to be honest with you guys, I really don't think anybody has been overly impressive in these first two games. I really don't.
And that's probably not a bad thing, because you know that they have a ceiling to grow and hopefully turn it on. I mean, the fact they were competitive against Chicago, I think people were satisfied with that, even though they lost. I think people were satisfied that they were competitive and that the game went down to the final whistle.
See, I would argue that I would not look at the score, and I didn't think they were competitive. I didn't think they played well.
You have to look at the score, though.
How much of that is them? How much of that is Chicago like playing that well that the Winnipeg can't play well? You know what I mean? It's always, you always hear the intermission in interviews.
Right, so they weren't competitive.
Well, I tend to agree with you more than Drew, to be honest with you. I didn't think aside from, first of all, those goals. The first one, a walk off the board, Sharp takes a bad angle, Oduya comes in, Slater makes a nice tip, bad defensive zone coverage by Chicago, and then they have the tip goal, right? And then you have the Wellwood play where Hainsey kind of created everything off the rush. But overall, Drew, there wasn't sustained pressure, there wasn't great scoring chances. I mean, Ladd missed an opportunity or two, but
Not the sustained pressure against Chicago. They're not good enough to sustain pressure against Chicago.
No, that's not true. You're not good enough to play with Chicago for 60 minutes, likely. But you can sustain pressure for periods of time. Every team can do it. The Jets need to sustain pressure.
Tell me which of the Jets' lines from Chicago's game, the game against Chicago, is able to sustain pressure against the Chicago opponents. And you should expect them to.
The first line can sustain pressure against the team. They should sustain pressure doesn't mean you dominate the
other
team.
I'm not saying dominate.
You at least keep the puck in their end for a little while. That's about attitude. It's about discipline. It's about not turning the puck over to the blue line.
By the way, every single line in the National Hockey League has the ability to sustain pressure.
Yes, exactly. When it doesn't happen, you can't be surprised about it.
Look at the Nashville Predators. The Nashville Predators can roll out anyone, and they can sustain pressure. So I think the Jets haven't brought their A-game, Drew. It's simple as that.
And I don't know that their A-game is much better than what we've seen.
Dun, dun, dun.
I don't agree with that, but
let's leave it there. When we come back on the other side, Paul Waldy of the Globe and Mail is going to join us. You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290, this Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My Ginsburg.
My Corona.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This is Old Dutch Foods Game Day. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. In case you missed the first hour, we were joined by Tyson Nash, color commentator for the Phoenix Coyotes. You can download that interview on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Download it. Get it sent to your iPod.
Yeah.
Follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.IllegalCurve.com. Michael Remus is in the other room working the phones to get Paul Waldy of the Globe and Mail on the line. It should happen any minute now. Once that does, we'll go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Paul Waldy of the Globe and Mail.
It's the first appearance?
No, not.
Oh, that's
Paul
right.
Was
second.
On, Paul was on
that's
before. Right. Paul, welcome back to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Doing very well. How are things in Phoenix this, I guess it would be morning there in Phoenix?
Pretty good, pretty warm. It's been very hot all week. It's been about 100 degrees every day, so a bit of a heat wave down here.
Nothing screams hockey like 100-degree weather, that's for sure.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Paul, let's start with, I mean, you're back in Winnipeg, or you're in Phoenix now, but you're back bringing the Jets in Winnipeg. You know, I believe, were you born in Winnipeg, is that right?
I was indeed, born and raised in Winnipeg, but obviously living in Toronto now, but happy to be back for a little while anyway, covering the Jets and all things Winnipeg, hopefully for the rest of the season, and we'll see how it goes.
Sounds good. What's your first impression? What jumps out at you being back covering this team?
Oh, obviously the excitement in the city for the team, it's certainly been a lot more than even I expected. I was around back in the WHA days, and, you know, there was excitement then for every game, but nothing like there was certainly at that game, that season opener Sunday against Montreal. That was pretty remarkable. You know, I was in Vancouver during the Olympics, and obviously there was an awful lot of hype then with people on the streets and that. And, well, not quite the same, because it obviously wasn't the Olympics, but the same type of enthusiasm was there and the same type of excitement was there last Sunday, so that was kind of fun to see.
Paul, Claude Noel has had a couple games now with this team, obviously a small sample size, but overall his mood, he seems to be a little bit frustrated with the performance so far. How would you classify his mood at this point in time?
I think he's completely baffled by this team, you know, and in the sort of comments he's made this week, we've heard him say on the one hand, you know, before Sunday's game, he was adamant this team had the playoffs within their grasp. Mm-hmm. I remember asking him if he was worried about anything. He said no, he wasn't worried about anything at all, that could this team make the playoffs? Yes, he was adamant. And then, of course, they come out pretty flat on Sunday and obviously get thrashed by the Montreal Canadiens. And after that, he's telling us, you know, he thought they'd scrimmaged well in the practice before the game. Obviously, he was disappointed with the game, and then he keeps saying how he's trying to find the A game out of these players, and that clearly hasn't happened. And obviously, there must be even more frustration after the Chicago game, because what you seem to see with these guys is flashes of real talent and brilliance. You know, a little bit, obviously, at the start of the game in Chicago and in the third period in the Montreal game. But they can't sustain that, and there's not a lot of consistency, and that's got to be baffling if you're a head coach.
Paul, after watching a couple of Jets games, can you explain to us what position Dustin Byfuglien is playing?
I'm not sure that the coaching staff had ever figured that out or was ever planning on figuring that out. And he's a guy, you know, and I'm no expert in hockey and certainly no expert on the Winnipeg Jets, but just in the little bit that I've watched him at practice, he doesn't always seem fully engaged. Now, maybe that's just the way he is, but he's clearly going to be a tough person to coach. He's going to be a tough person to give direction to. And even when they went on that team-building exercise where they all went rowing, you know, before the season started, he seemed kind of off in his own world and not really all that interested. So I don't know if that's just him and his personal makeup, or if he's just going to be a pretty different kind of individual to try and coach.
This is Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Paul Waldy of the Globe and Mail. Paul, you wrote in today's Globe about how this is, you know, Jets 2.0 versus Jets 1.0. Do you expect there to be any animosity between the two fan bases in attendance at Jobbing.com Arena tonight?
Well, I wonder, you know, they're making a big deal here about this being their 15th year. They're handing out T-shirts at the start of the game. They've got kind of the logo on the ice with the 15th anniversary. So that strikes me as rubbing it a little bit in people's noses, certainly people from Winnipeg, that, you know, this franchise has been here for 15 years, because all anybody ever talks about in Winnipeg is how the franchise hasn't been there in 15 years. So I don't know if that's deliberate or not, but there may be. But I think there's an awful lot more animosity on the other side, or an awful lot more gloating on the other side, and you're going to see an awful lot more excitement on the Winnipeg side. I'm not really sure people in this city are captivated by this at all. I think hockey fans are. There's still an awful lot of tickets available for this game. You can get a ticket for $20, less than $20, I saw this week on StubHub. So I'm not really sure with a big college football game underway this afternoon that this is going to be a big deal in Phoenix. But I do think amongst hockey fans there may be a little bit of, you know, a little bit of animosity, but not that much. I still don't think they figured out where this team is headed next year. And if there's any animosity or gloating, it's probably going to be on the Winnipegger side.
Paul, everybody wants to know about the line combinations, and people are wondering if there's going to be a change up front, at least to the second and third lines. Can you give us a little bit of an update? Should we expect to see Andrew Kane playing alongside Alexander Burmistrov and Nikolai Antropov?
That's a good question. I don't know. We didn't get a chance to talk to them yesterday. They practiced in Chicago before coming here, and I was already here. We're hoping to talk to some of the players this afternoon. Noel's pretty tight-lipped about, you know, different combinations and even who's going to play in goal, which could be another issue. Those lines, however they want to juggle them, but I think you guys were just talking about the first-line performance, and that's the line people have to worry about. Those are the guys that are supposed to be scoring all the goals, and you look right now, and the goal-scoring leader is Jim Slater, and I'm not sure that that's going to be sustainable for the rest of the year. So it's that first line that I think is the bigger concern right now, and just where they're headed and when their production is really gonna start.
Paul, we wanted to ask you about Patrice Cormier. We were a little bit surprised when the Jets acquired Brett McLean and then moved Cormier down to St. John's of the AHL to make room for McLean. You know, based on the struggles that Brett McLean has had, Kyle Wellwood, you could argue, has struggled a little bit, and obviously Mark Scheifele has no points and, you know, played less than 10 minutes against the Blackhawks. How long do you expect Patrice Cormier to be in the AHL?
Well, that's a good question. I think it was a little bit surprising that he was sent back before the season even started. And, of course, there was all that hustling of getting McLean up, ironically enough, from the Phoenix organization. And he kind of came in kind of baffled and befuddled. And you know, give him some kind of credit because he was only there for a few days before the Montreal game, got thrown into that game, obviously played a little bit in Chicago. And we'll see what happens here, how much playing time he gets here. But you're right, I don't know. That seems to be kind of a juggling spot right now between him and Cormier and what they're going to do with him. And, you know, as for Scheifele, I really don't think there's much chance of him staying with the team beyond the 9 games. So who knows what happens then either.
Well, let's talk about that. You mentioned, I mean, during the preseason, and of course it's a lot easier to say things in the preseason, you know, Scheifele was the king of the town and Noel loved him and he said, oh, I expect him to be up all season long. After 2 games, I mean, does he look as overmatched to you as he does to the rest of us?
Well, I didn't see the game in Chicago, but certainly watching the game on Monday, which might not be fair since, you know, a lot of these guys really didn't play that well on Monday or on Sunday, you know, he did look out of place. He looked a little bit unsure of himself. I think obviously there is a huge jump between preseason and regular season and also playing a team like Montreal and then playing Chicago. I'm not sure he fared much better against Chicago. I'm not sure. You know, I don't think anybody really expected him to stick around beyond the 9 games. I mean, he's not a big kid. He's tall. He's not very thick. He's not a huge kid. And why wouldn't you send him back to get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, a little bit more polished for another year instead of having his contract kick? And I have no doubt that he'll be sent back, if only for that reason. It wouldn't make a lot of sense to keep him here unless he was super productive in these first couple of games. Now let's see what he does today, but certainly as it stands right now, I don't think there's any chance of him sticking around.
You know, going back to, let's assume that Kane, Burmistrov, and Antropov play together because that's what sort of everybody's been waiting for. Do you think that playing them apart for the first couple games was a mistake and maybe set the team back and their chemistry back a little bit?
Well, it sure seems to, because I know Kane was one of the guys that, and I know I don't think Noel, in fairness, didn't really single him out, but when asked about Kane, he did say there's a guy he really had been expecting a lot more, amongst others as well. But, you know, in a sense, he singled him out because he wanted more from him. And I think the first game he was pairing him up with was Scheifele and Wellwood. But, it'll be interesting. I know they really like that Burmistrov and Andropov together. Noel mentioned that, and that they work well together and they play well together. So I suppose that'll be interesting. But Kane's a guy they're really counting on, so they'll probably do anything they can and juggle anything they can to try and get him going.
If they keep those three together, let's go back to the Scheifele, McLean, and Wellwood line. You know, I'm trying to be nice by saying that, but you know, how overmatched is that line as a third line NHL line on a night-to-night basis?
Well, very overmatched. And again, you know, Scheifele, you know, I think he has shown that he has been overmatched. He's shown that maybe he didn't realize that the big jump it would be from preseason to regular season. You know, so he's been overmatched. We've already talked about McLean looking overmatched. Wellwood, he's been pretty steady. He's kind of done what Wellwood does. You know, got that goal the other night. They've got a lot of problems to fix on this team. It's easy to single out a few, but I think there's an awful lot of things on this team that they're going to have to either try and sort out or hope get sorted out. You know, again, it's only two games, so, you know, I don't think they can get too upset or too concerned or make too many drastic changes. But nonetheless, there's a trend developing. You know, look, this is a team, as I think everybody in Winnipeg probably knows by now, it's the only team in the NHL without a single point. So they got to do something.
You know, I didn't realize that, but that makes sense. You know, with the Penguins game coming up on Monday, Pittsburgh comes to town. Then they have the two-game road trip through Ottawa and Toronto. How important is tonight's game to have a strong effort on the ice and, you know, get a point on the score sheet?
Well, you know, obviously, you know, all the games are important, but you're absolutely right. They have a horrendous schedule the next few weeks if you look at it. Most of their games are on the road. They have an in-game road trip coming up very soon. They're rarely back at home now. In December, it's just the opposite. They're nothing but at home, but you don't want to be too far behind the eight ball come December. So, you know, I think they'd really like to get a win here or at least get a point out of this game. It's going to be tough, though. You know, you look at Phoenix, they lost the first game pretty badly, lost a close second game, I think, in a shootout, and then had a very strong game on Thursday. Mm-hmm. They got a lot of confidence out of that Thursday game, so they looked very loose, very confident yesterday when we saw them in practice, and certainly are not conceding anything to Winnipeg. If anything, they're looking at this as a game that they want to win to try and keep on track. So what could have been an E for Winnipeg, I think, has just gotten an awful lot tougher because Phoenix won that game at Phoenix in Nashville and are feeling pretty good about themselves. So it's going to be very tough for Winnipeg today. They should have, ironically enough, a very friendly crowd. There are so many Winnipeg Jets fans here. I just saw a whole bunch of them in the lobby this morning. So they're going to have the crowd on their side, but as we've seen before, that doesn't necessarily help them.
We will find out probably around 9 o'clock or so Winnipeg time tonight. Paul Waldy from the Globe and Mail, thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey
Show.
Thanks a lot, Paul. Enjoy the game. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
This is Old Dutch Foods game day on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's head to break. When we come back on the other side, more in-depth analysis. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Carbone, coal-fired pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked. Well done.
When are our friends from Carbone coming in to make us the Illegal Curve pizza?
I think we're in negotiations over that. We have to discuss this.
Talking to our good friend Dan Simon, co-owner of Carbone, he said it's in the works. So I'm excited because, as you know, I always like to eat pizza.
Won't jumping the shark by getting a pizza?
I don't think so. Okay, if we got a shark pizza, we'd be jumping the shark.
Yeah, we should get a shark pizza.
Can you get shark on a pizza?
I've had shark before, and when I was in Vancouver,
shark fin at dim sum is not actually shark.
Shark's good. It tastes like salmon.
You know, when me and Ezra were in Minneapolis at the draft, we actually had bear pizza, and it was pretty good.
It wasn't bear meat, was it?
No, it was just meat? Like...
It was
like
called the bear. I was going to say...
There's only one bear, and he's sitting in the host chair.
Do people eat bear?
I don't think people eat bear.
But that would be like eating Drew. He's the bear.
That's what Richie just said.
Well, he used to be the... Oh, did you just say that?
He said something similar to that.
Yeah, well, me and Richie hang out so much that we tend to tune each other out and just have our own individual conversations with other people, so...
Let's talk about the second line in tonight's game. That's the we finally get to see Kane, Antropov, and Burmistrov together. I'm quite certain about the logic of splitting the three of them up in the first two games, but it sounds like the three of them are going to play together tonight. You know, what do you look to see from that combo?
Well, I look to see Burmistrov is a setup guy.
Yeah,
and I look to see him playing with like Kane. That seems like it suits their skills well to play together. Burmistrov also has speed. He can back off defensemen, and then, you know, and so does Kane. So they should be able to, with their skating ability and Burmistrov's passing ability, with Kane's shooting ability and willingness to go to the net, by the way. Kane goes to the net. Kane doesn't score all of his goals from pretty areas. He goes to the net. He's got a good shot. He's fast. I think he actually complements those two players quite well, especially the fact that you guys, we talk about the skating element and those two guys complementing each other well. What about Antropov? Well, with Antropov not being a great skater, you put him with two fast guys, it hides that fact.
Right.
And you put him on the wing, and wingers have far less responsibility in most systems, and as far as I can tell so far, the Jets system, the center will always have a lot of defensive responsibility. I really do think it's a combination that could serve as what you want if you're the Jets. Is you want your second line to push to be your first line. And that sounds cliche, But with those guys and the talent there, they should be pushing those guys.
You would be thrilled. We've said this before, but you're thrilled to see Kane, Burmistrov, and Antropov become the first line at some point during the season, sort of make a natural progression. Because, I mean, that would be, if that can happen, then things are going well for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, and you look at Kane, right, and you look at Burmistrov, and Burmistrov is 19 in his second year, and Kane is 20 in his third year. And those guys are maybe a little bit too young to be first-liners, but talent-wise, yeah, they are probably the most talented guys offensively on the team. And you know what, guys, I think that this second line, you know, this had to be their second line. I realize that, you know, Eric Ferrer is going to be back in, what, about a month? Expected to be back mid-November, maybe a little bit longer. He might not be back till December. We'll see. But you know, he's going to be a guy that might be on the second line. But you got to have a guy with Burmistrov's speed to play with Kane's speed.
Kane is
a beautiful skater and he's fast. And I just don't think that even though Scheifele's got talent, Wood's got talent, I don't think that they were basically able to complement Kane. And this line, I said this earlier in the show, I'm expecting this line to be more of a factor and than they were in the first two games, for sure.
Let's talk about their speed, because it seems like their speed versus whoever's the second pairing for the Phoenix Coyotes defenseman would be a mismatch in the Jets' favor, that they just can't handle the speed that would be coming at them from Kane and Burmistrov. Is that a fair statement?
Phoenix defense.
Their second pairing defense.
Well, it depends on the defense when they match up against them, Drew. I mean, some of their guys are slower than others. Adrian Ekholm being one of the slower guys. But a guy like Ekman Larson and Tyson Nash spoke about it in the first hour. He can skate. So it depends on who they match him up against. But you can certainly take advantage of guys like Morris and Ekholm and wide. Absolutely. And I think that you can take advantage of Keith Yandle defensively. I think Keith Yandle gets talked about as one of the best all-around defensemen in the National Hockey League. I don't think that's accurate. I think he's one of the best offensive defensemen in the National Hockey League who's improved defensively.
Yeah.
He's not one of the best all-around defensemen in the National Hockey League. He blows assignments in his own zone. He gets eager to join the rush. He can be beaten and taken advantage of defensively.
So how do you take advantage of him?
You get possession of the puck and you get it below the hash marks. You make him play defense. You make him work in his own end. And you make and with the cycle and with just movement, you make him make reads, and he's not great at making defensive reads. That's what you want to do to take advantage of guys like this. And obviously speed's a factor, size is a factor, puck skills are a factor. You can skate and be big all you want. If you can hold the puck and position yourself, you know, like Peter Forsberg was one of the best ever at all at that. Wasn't the biggest guy.
It's just using
great,
the angle.
Obviously,
just, is that like using the angle of your body to your advantage?
That's exactly right.
And Drew, remember, you know, what we were talking about in the first hour. Evander Kane, Alexander Burmistrov, Nick Antropov, they have the ability to maintain possession of the offensive zone, establish a cycle.
They do.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely.
Evander Kane is a physical player. He's very talented. Yeah. He's physical. Burmistrov is physical. When I was looking at the Jets earlier this year, it's funny, I kind of wrote something about Burmistrov, and then someone corrected me on the website and said, you know what, look at Burmistrov. He's not your maybe prototypical Russian player that doesn't like the physical contact. Burmistrov will lay a hit and he'll get in there. So as far as I'm concerned, this line, along with the first line, obviously, can establish something earlier in the game and create more offense off of the cycle maybe that they didn't have in the first two games. That's what you're going to see a lot of people, obviously, especially if the Jets struggle, which they've had in the first two games, talk about improvements and all that. And it doesn't matter how much you improve, you're going to have to get wins. In the NHL, you have to get wins. But as far as I'm concerned, that's something that I'll maybe look at more so than the score, if maybe the score isn't flattering to the Jets.
Let's talk also about another thing, and that Burmistrov needs to get power play time, guys. He needs to get power play time.
Well, the power play for the Jets has been...
He didn't get any power play time last game.
They put Wellwood
on over him, and maybe people say, oh, well... This is a development process too here, guys. This is not a team that went to playoffs. You got to get Burmistrov some ice time. If you want him to be turned into an offensive player, first of all, I know power play guys, obviously you're going to get more opportunities to score on the power play, but also what happens is players don't think about it that way. And that they get points, they get confidence. They don't care how they get their points. They just want to get their points. Do we really care at the end of the day if Kyle Wellwood gets the points or not?
You're saying because he's not going to be a...
He's not a long-term solution here from what we want and what the team wants. And so you need a guy like Burmistrov to get power play ice time. You want to see what you got there.
Well, how does the Jets' power play is 0-for through the first two games?
Yeah, I mean, that's
Coyotes' penalty is perfect. Mm-hmm. I know it's too early for a sample size, but how do you get that power play going?
You know, just more opportunities, Drew. I like the way they're setting up.
they've had chances. Their setup is fine. They've done the same thing basically in training camp and then taken into the season. The power play penalty, like, will still go for a game or a couple games, and I wouldn't worry about it. If they, you know, we're talking about this after Ottawa in game six, so, you know, 1-for-4, whatever it may be, then maybe it's an issue, but I wouldn't concern. I'm more concerned about the penalty kill, because what I'm seeing on the power play isn't necessarily bad things. What I'm seeing on the penalty kill is, I like the more aggressive approach sometimes, but there's a lack of positioning and a lack of communication there that is a little bit troubling.
Richie, Drew, you know what? I agree with Richie. The penalty kill and the way it's been the first two games scares me a lot more. And the power play hasn't been good. But to be honest with you, I saw some things that I liked on the power play. You know what? Yes. Bufflin and Enstrom, that combo, it was good last year.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they haven't scored, it's been good this year. And the way I look at the penalty kill, that's where I want to see what are you going to do with your 1-2 combo, because on forward and on defense, Oduya hasn't worked. Bogosian's got to get more time on the penalty kill. They've got to figure that out. That scares me a lot.
When
more.
You say communication, tell me what you mean by communication and why that's hindering the penalty kill right now.
Your top guy play maybe something like a box plus one or something like that, and you're gonna play a defensive style, okay? And when you're on the penalty kill, you're going to have certain positions that guys have to stay in. Maybe kind of as, it depends on the look you're doing. But what I'm saying is what's happening is you're getting guys who are pursuing. In the defensive zone, too, Drew, this doesn't just go for the penalty kill. I'm even talking more so about defensive zone. And you're having rotations, and the guys aren't rotating. And so a guy's covering his guy. For example, let's talk about the goal that Hossa scored, okay? If you watched the Thursday game, I forget who it was, but I think it was Tanner Glass was pursuing the guy along the blue line. Nobody rotated up to the right side of the ice if you were watching the game on TV. And so Hossa gets the puck, and nobody had rotated up. And what happens is, and they were talking about it on TSN, defensemen can't go to the blue line to cover the forward. Right?
They'd be leaving their exactly. responsibilities so either, in front of the net.
Exactly. So you're kind of playing a man-to-man system, and where Tanner Glass is chasing, and then somebody has to get up on Hossa, which would give me Slater, because if it's three players and two of them are defensemen, the forward has to get up there, right? That's one thing. Alternatively, if you're going to play more of a zone style and that you're making sure you take away certain parts of the ice, then Glass can't pursue. By what I can tell, they want Glass to pursue the pressure on the blue line, and then when Hossa gets the puck on the kind of on the top of the half boards there, a guy like Slater has to rotate up, and so they're not talking, and so the defenseman and Slater were both sitting basically below the hash marks,
and then Hossa walked right in and
scored.
Yeah, with a bullet.
And that's communication. That'll take practice and time, but that's just talking. That's knowing each other, and you know when your fourth line has to be defensively responsible, that's one thing that they have to be, and obviously they've been the best line so far. So I'm not. Working them over at all. But just that's a communication factor. On the PK, sometimes I feel like the top two, the forwards on top of the box are getting over-aggressive on the same side. And so one's pursuing that, and then they're just passing the puck to the weak side defenseman who's stepping in for a great shot.
So what you're saying is the top two forwards are both pursuing one defenseman, the left wing the defenseman at the left point,
right.
Who's just feeding the puck over to the right defenseman, and he's got
right.
tons
and it's
of
not,
room to walk
it's
in.
It's not when the play stagnates; it's when the play's moving around a bit, and then they're getting caught up, and then you see open shots from the point, and open shots from the point lead to power play. Sorry, lead to rebounds and goals and tip-ins.
Could it be deliberate that they're sending two players after the puck?
I think they're trying to refine the system that they're going to play. But I see more good things in the power play than I do with the penalty kill.
Before we go to break quickly, let me ask.
Let me say this though. I got
sure.
a text.
Okay.
From a friend in Calgary, our friend Sean in Calgary says, "I love it. I'm listening to the program, listening to our show live on his iPhone in his truck." On the Bell Media app.
That's right. You can.
Nice.
That's right. If you're not, if you don't happen to be near a radio or a computer at the moment,
you can
just download it. You download the Bell Media app. Just
you can
click
listen
on,
to it on
just
your
click
iPhone.
On,
nice.
Yeah, iPhone, great. BlackBerry,
iPad,
matter.
Whatever.
I have
fantastic.
I have the app on my BlackBerry. Just download the Bell Media app. You can listen to TSN 1290. You can listen to the Montreal station if you wanted. You can listen to TSN in Toronto. It doesn't matter. But that's a good point. Thank you for Sean in Calgary for reminding us that no matter where you are, as long as you have a smartphone. You can find us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. It is Old Dutch Foods game day here on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be back with more after these commercial messages.